Hey, man, let's give it up for John and the band this morning. Man, these guys are awesome. You know, and these are all volunteers up here, by the way, in case you're wondering. PJ every now and gets a weekend off, and it's great for him, and we just have great leadership, so thank you. Hey, my name's Kurt. I'm the lead pastor here at Cross Point. It's great to have you here at Cross Point with us this morning. We realize there's so many places you could be during the Christmas season, and if you're here for the first time, man, we're just really excited to have you with us this morning. And if you are here for the first time, you probably don't realize this. If you're here, you know, somewhat regularly, you realize Kurt doesn't sound the way he normally does. I've had this like head cold going on, so my main goal today is really lofty. It's to get through the service without an amplified sneeze. All right, because that would be really gross, and for the front row especially. But you know, so we're gonna push through this, and really excited because Christmas season is awesome. It's the best time of the year, right? Like most wonderful time of the year. You're not convinced. Maybe we've convinced you that it's not so perfect after all. Because, you know, if your Christmas is anything like ours in our home, you know, we always have these ideas of, oh, it's going to be different this year, and you want it to be warm, and everything goes the way you want it to, but it just doesn't go that way. And what's so amazing, as Eric, you know, connected a few minutes ago, is that's how the first Christmas was. I mean, you have Mary, as we looked at last week, who, you know, wasn't expecting to be a mother. You have Joseph, we looked at 2 weeks ago, who didn't want his first fathering experience to be that of a stepdad. You know, you have, you know, people like the shepherds who, you know, the angels are appearing, and everybody's going, dude, God, what are you doing? You don't show up to shepherds. Those are like the lowlife of the community. Why are you talking to them? And then, of course, baby Jesus, you know, kind of coming into the world in cloths and into this like unsanitary, dirty environment. I mean, you know, Jesus, the amazing thing is, you know, Jesus emerges into imperfect places. And so if you feel like, you know, your life isn't exactly the way you want it to be going right now or in exactly the place you want it to be, welcome to Christmas, because this is where the Christmas story is birthed. And so we're glad you're here today. And again, if you're a guest, I mean, we're so excited. And, you know, we just feel like, you know, it's a great time to be in church, especially today. Some things we're going to look at that hopefully will help us see through some of the characters we're going to look at today just how much this story connects with us, you know, and this whole, you know, tiny, sweet little baby Jesus wrapped in his gold fleece diapers, you know, his little bald
fist. Dear Lord, baby Jesus, or as our brothers to the south call you, hey Zeus. We thank you so much for this bountiful harvest of Domino's, KFC, and the always delicious Taco Bell. I just want to take time to say thank you for my family, my two beautiful, beautiful, handsome, striking sons, Walker and Texas Ranger, or TR, as we call them. And of course, my red-hot smoking wife, Carly, who's a stone-cold fox. Also want to thank you for my best friend and teammate, Cal Naughton Jr., who's got my back no matter what.
Shake and bake.
Dear Lord, baby Jesus, we also thank you for my wife's father, Chip. We hope that you can use your baby Jesus powers to heal him and his horrible leg. And it smells terrible, and the dogs are always bothering with it. Dear tiny infant Jesus.
Hey, you know, sweetie, Jesus did grow up. You don't always have to call him baby. It's a bit odd and off-putting to pray to a baby.
Well, look, I like the Christmas Jesus best, and I'm saying grace. When you say grace, you can say it to grown-up Jesus or teenage Jesus or bearded Jesus or whoever you want.
You know what I want? I want you to do this grace good so that God will let us win tomorrow.
Dear tiny Jesus, your golden fleece diapers with your tiny little fat balled-up fist pawing.
He was a man. He had a beard.
Look, I like the baby version the best. Do you hear me? I win the races and I get the money.
Ricky.
I like to picture Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt because it says, like, I want to be formal, right, but I'm here to party, too. Because I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party.
I like to picture Jesus as a ninja fighting off evil samurai.
I like to think of Jesus, like, with giant eagle's wings and singing lead vocals for Lynyrd Skynyrd with, like, an angel band. And I'm in the front row and I'm hammered drunk.
Hey, Cal. Why don't you just shut up?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Dear 8-pound, 6-ounce, newborn infant Jesus, don't even know a word yet, just a little infant, so cuddly, but still omnipotent. We just thank you for all the races I've won and the $21.2 million. Woo!
Woo!
Woo! Ow!
Oh, man, you know. So regardless of which Jesus you like to pray to or how you think of Jesus, you know, we're, of course, celebrating how God lowered himself down as a little a little baby in an infant form. And, you know, today we're going to be taking a look at this story from a little different perspective. And I want to talk about one of the people in the story that I most connect with in the story, in this Christmas story. And if I were to ask you, you know, who do you most connect with in the story? I mean, you know, am I say, is it Mary? Do you connect with Mary? Like, I don't know if I really connect with her. Is it Joseph? No, I don't really know anything about him. I don't think it's him. How about like the, you know, the shepherds? Nope, they're afraid, man. I'm not afraid. I don't connect with that. You know, and so the wise men, you may know the wise men, the magi. No, we don't really know much, you know, we don't connect with that realm. So baby Jesus, anybody connect with baby Jesus? Yeah. Like, definitely not baby Jesus. You know, so, you know, and I hope this becomes clear today, the person that I most connect with every time I prepare, you know, come like October, November, start reading the story and start saying, okay, what does this mean for where we are today? The person that I usually most connect with is the oftentimes referred to as the villain of the story, King Herod. And I think you'll understand why in a few minutes, but I just think that there's a little bit of King Herod in every single one of us. See, King Herod was the king of this place called Judea, which means that he was the appointed king from the Roman Empire over this area of Judea. And so he wasn't even Jewish, which drove the Jewish people crazy. They have a king that's not even from their lineage. And so he's the king of Judea when Jesus emerges on the scene, when Jesus is born into Bethlehem. And Herod is very smart. He's very talented. He's politically astute. He's ambitious. I mean, he's a get-after-it guy. He was a builder. I mean, he was building the Jewish temple, restored it, building it up into all of its glory. I mean, he built port cities, and he built aqueducts for the city. And I mean, he was just an extraordinary person as it came to his talent, except his ambition got the best of him in the end. In fact, the thing that got him in trouble, as you probably remember back to like junior high, you know, ancient history class, you know, which some of you are like breaking out in a sweat. You're like, really? We're talking about that today? Yeah, we're going to dive in there a little bit so you have it understand some context. He befriended somebody named Mark Anthony. All right, remember Mark Anthony? He befriended Mark Anthony, kind of aligned with him. And he had a very famous wife. Anybody remember his famous wife? No, it's Jennifer Lopez. You ever, the first for a couple people right here, Cleopatra. You know, everybody in Egypt, she was from Egypt. People love Cleopatra or they hated her. It's one or the other. And Mark Anthony, so he aligns with him. And basically, you know, they end up in a civil war. And unfortunately for Herod, he bet on the wrong horse. Mark Anthony was the wrong horse. All right, he was the wrong guy. No more than they get into these wars, and all of a sudden, Mark Anthony's legion, his like army, is getting annihilated. So he bails and goes back to Alexandria. And so, you know, as the kingdom kind of begins to take force and change hands, all these things happen. You know, in a short period of time, Julius Caesar's nephew, Caesar Augustus, becomes the first emperor of the world power, the Roman Empire. And so, as these civil wars happen, and Herod is in Judea, and he realizes, oh my word, I got behind the wrong guy. I went with the wrong guy. He realizes I have three options now at this point. I can either just take my own life, I can kill myself, because that's probably what's going to happen in the end anyway. Or I can try to run from the Roman Empire, and that never does any good, because that thing's going to chase you down. Or I can try to hunker down and lay low and just see if they ignore me. But Herod, see, here's the thing about Herod. He's so politically astute. He is so smart. He's so about maintaining his legacy. He does something absolutely unbelievable. And this is unbelievable politically. This is so smart politically for him. He gets on a boat, and he goes to the island of Rhodes, where he knew Caesar Augustus, or Octavius, as he was once called, is at, and he goes, he knocks on the door of the Roman Empire. He knocks on the door of Caesar Augustus. He shows up at the front door, and they answer the door, and they're like, what are you doing here, Herod? You're an enemy of the state. And they're like, we were going to come after you eventually. We're kind of letting you do your thing. We're going to come after you and like put you in the ground, but you show up at our door. What are you doing? And they let him in, and Herod gives this speech that is just so amazing and incredible in front of everyone and in front of Caesar Augustus. He says basically, Caesar, you know that I've been aligned with one of your enemies, Mark Antony. He says, you know I've aligned with him, and you know that we went through the civil war together, and you know that I stayed with him to the very end, which should show you that, man, when I get behind somebody, I'm with them from the beginning to the end. And then he turns and he looks at Caesar in the eyes and he says, oh, great Caesar, I pledge my loyalty to you right now. And Caesar is so impressed that he, you know, came and came right to his front door and made this speech and pledged his allegiance, that not only did he not take the kingdom of Judea away from Herod, he actually gave him more. He gave him Samaria and Jericho and Gaza. I mean, that's King Herod. King Herod is so smart. He's so politically astute. He's so ambitious. But the thing that got him in trouble, was he was so committed to his own control. He was so committed to his own legacy that he just made bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. In fact, he changed his will like four times, right? He had like 10 wives and all these sons through his wives. And every few years, he'd change his will and he'd put a different son in power as the next one that's going to be in power after him. And they'd be like, oh, no, I don't think I want that son. So he'd replace that son with somebody else in his will. And he'd, of course, have to execute that son because, you know, he couldn't have him like around, you know, stirring up trouble. So he'd put another son in. Then he'd change his will again. He'd have to execute that son. And before long, his sons are like, Dad, I think we're good. I don't really need to be in the will. All right, I think we're all right. And so King Herod was just so committed to controlling his kingdom and growing his kingdom and concerned with his legacy because he wanted forever and ever somebody from his lineage to be sitting in the throne of king. And so he killed his wife once. I mean, he killed, like, you know, priests in the Jerusalem community. I mean, you know, priests from and rabbis from the Judean area, they didn't want to go to Jerusalem because, you know, they knew, man, Herod, man, when Herod's mad, everybody suffers. When Herod is uneasy, everybody pays for it. You know, because Herod was all about controlling his kingdom, all about maintaining his kingdom, all about controlling his legacy. He was kind of like the Kevin Spacey of the House of Cards, all right? If anybody's House of Cards fans, I kind of got in that over the last few years. Don't judge me for that. But, you know, he'll do anything possible, anything, to maintain his legacy. So when we get to the biblical narrative where Jesus begins to emerge on the scene, sweet little baby Jesus all wrapped, you know, in gold fleece. Man, I love that scene. Isn't that scene great? Man, it's one of the best Christmas scenes ever. See, by the time we get to Jesus emerging on the scene, King Herod is like 70 years old. Right, and he's got kidney disease by this point. So he's in a lot of pain. He's very, very sick. He's trying to consolidate his kingdom. And he's trying to prepare the next generation to take over his lineage as king. And then all of a sudden, he gets the most disturbing news a king could get. 5 miles. 5 miles from where he stood, there was a new king. And this king was learning how to walk. And so this is where we find the story in Matthew chapter 2. It says, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, that's where King Herod had been ruling, during the time of King Herod, Magi, or we called them wise men growing up, right? Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked. And just imagine for a moment, you know Herod now, right? When Herod's uneasy, when Herod feels threatened, everybody's uneasy. And these guys come into the city of Jerusalem, and they're like, hey, where's the one? Where's the one? We heard he's here. And everybody's going, shh, 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 shh. Have you met King Herod? They're like, well, we saw his star when it rose, and we've come to worship him. We came to Jerusalem. We came to the capital city. We know we're close. We got to be close. Said, when King Herod heard this, he was disturbed and all Jerusalem with it. See, now that you know a little background about King Herod, you understand why the whole city was disturbed, right? Because when Herod was disturbed, it was dangerous. When Herod was uneasy, everybody was uneasy. When King Herod was bothered, anything was likely to happen. And now, Herod is an old man, and he's writhing in pain from this disease that's taking over his body. And suddenly, his legacy and his kingdom and his future and his control is at risk because of a little infant baby that just emerged 5 miles from there. Story goes on. It says, when he called together the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. So he gathered all the religious leaders, spiritual leaders, got them together in one room, and he's like, hey, tell me where this kid is. Tell me where this baby is. And they're like, Herod, you should know this. Everybody knows this. Every Jewish boy that studied the scriptures knows where what the prophet said was going to take place. He said, in Bethlehem in Judea. They replied, for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah. See, this had been predicted like many, many, many years before. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. And this was the absolute worst news that Herod could get. In fact, this was the worst news that the region could get. Because remember, when Herod's not happy, nobody's happy. says, then Herod called the Magi secretly. He's like, I just want to talk to him. I just want to find out where this baby is. And found out from them the exact time the star had appeared and sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. He said, as soon as you find them, he said, hang on, right here. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go worship him. It says, after they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star that they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child and his mother, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Now, this word worship is really interesting because, you know, in our modern day, we've made worship synonymous with singing, right? We think, well, I came to worship this morning. We didn't come to worship. We call it service. This is a service. It's a worship service. But, you know, that worship isn't singing. That's one element of singing. Worship is recognizing you're in the presence of something or someone who should cause you to just go, wow. Where you just go, oh, wow. You just have a sense of awe. And essentially, when you get into that place, you physically and mentally and emotionally even, you intellectually, you begin to surrender yourself, to submit yourself to just whatever it is that's in front of you. And see, these men, they had traveled a long way. And they're now in the presence of this baby. And this baby had no physical power. But it was who they believed this baby to be that caused them to drop to their knees. And they dropped to their knees and they worshiped him. And 5 miles away was King Herod. And he's going, where is he? Where is he? Who's the one? Where's that little kid? Where's that little kid? Because he's so worried about controlling things. Because his whole life was built around preserve, protect, and control. Preserve, protect, and control. Preserve, protect, and control. I mean, he led with clenched fists all the time. Clenched fists. I mean, controlling everything. Controlling. If he was happy, people were happy. If he was sad, people were sad. If he was bothered, people suffered. He's like, I'm not about to let some king come in, some baby king come in. I'm not going to bow a knee or worship anyone. This is why I say there's a little bit of Herod in every single one of us. Because, you know, I'm kind of like you. I might understand. I mean, you know, we like to leverage God, right? We're like, man, God, as long as you're building my kingdom, man, I'm all in on what you're doing, God. I mean, I don't mind going to church or, you know, reading the Bible or praying a little bit, you know, as long as all these things will help me and my future be, you know, better. I mean, I'm all for it. But this whole idea of like writing God a blank check with my life, I mean, of surrendering my life and saying, God, I'm going to follow you regardless of what happens. I mean, even if it's kind of messy and it's a little less than perfect according to my plan, even if it means another king 5 miles from me, I'm in. See, that doesn't come easy to any of us, does it? That's why I say there's a little bit of Herod in every single one of us. Story continues. It says, and having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they, this is referring to the Magi or the wise men, they returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said. Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt. Can you just hear like the background track getting real heavy, like dun 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 dun? You know, it's like you can just sense that there's something about to happen. And it says, when Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And when Herod was furious, people suffered. When Herod was furious, he had no idea what he was going to do. Because men, listen to this. Men, this is so important for you to grasp especially. Because Herod spent his whole life controlling everything. He spent his whole life controlling outcomes. I mean, no matter what happened, Herod always had a way to control it, to get it to end up the way he wanted. Even when he bet on the wrong horse, even when he aligned with Jennifer Lopez's husband, you know, he still worked that in a way. He was crafty in a way that he was bold enough to be able to control the outcome. He was the master at controlling outcomes. And he had figured out. He thought, man, here I go again. I've beat destiny once again. But see, he this time had been outsmarted by a baby and a couple of Jewish parents. And he just decided, there is no way. There is no way I'm going to be thwarted by this thing. He's like, I'm definitely not going to be thwarted by in the end, all, of all things, a baby toddler king? Seriously? So he gave orders that you and I can't even fathom. In fact, when we read this in a moment, you're going to be like, really? I didn't even know that was part of the Christmas story. He gave orders that you can't imagine unless you understand who King Herod is. So it says he gave orders to kill all the boys. See, he said, if you're not going to bring me the one, if you're not going to show me exactly where he is, then I'm going to pull out the nuclear option. I'm going to kill them all. So it says he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and in its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time that he had learned from the Magi. And so they did. One horrible afternoon, one horrible evening, his armies were sent into the little villages in this Judean area. And in every hut and grass, you know, roofed, ceilinged little structure that people were living in, they went in and they took every boy that looked to be 2 years of age or younger and murdered him in front of his family. And anybody who tried to stop them was murdered as well. And Mary lived with the knowledge of this. Think about that. Think about Mary exiling to Egypt knowing what was happening to her friends and their children. But here's what soon happened. Soon after that, Herod died. Herod died a very, very painful death. He died of kidney disease. And before he died, he gave one final command. In fact, his final command was he said to his officers, I want you to go out into the entire region, and I want you to collect all the influential and distinguished men, and I want you to throw them into prison. And the moment I die, see, Herod was about controlling everything. He controlled every outcome. He said, the moment I die, he said, I want you to kill all those influential men because I want there to be people mourning on the day that I die in my region. Because see, he knew. He knew the whole community was going to have a party to end all parties when he died because he was despised. And so his officials, the moment he died, they went to the prisons and they took those men and they actually unlocked the gates and let them go free. They did not carry through on his orders because Herod was gone. Story goes on, verse 19, it says, after Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph, and he said, get up and take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel. For those who are trying to take the child's life are dead. See, in this little bit of twist of history right here, he was known once as Herod the Great, but in this little twist of fate, Herod the Great, who did all these amazing things, Herod the Great, who becomes, in this moment, a footnote to the story of Jesus, this sweet little baby king. I mean, can you imagine being the one who had to go and break the news to Herod? You know, he's like on his deathbed. He's there dying in his last hours. And, hey, Herod, I got some good news and I got some bad news. All right, let me tell you the good news first. Good news is, hey, guess what? 2,000 years from now, people are going to be reading this story and you're going to be mentioned in it. He's like, yeah, awesome. That's what I've been going for. Hey, guess what, Herod? 2,000 years from now, in languages that have yet to even be created, you're going to be mentioned by name, and you're going to be read in the story along in the lineage of kings. They're going to read about you. He's like, that's awesome. Now the bad news. You're just going to be a B character. Right? You're simply a sidebar. You're simply a sidebar, a beeline to a toddler who became the king, the savior of the world. And people will talk about what you built. People will talk about the seaports, and they'll talk about the aqueducts, and they'll talk about the temple, and yet those are the things you won't be remembered by. You won't be remembered as Herod the Great or Herod the Builder. You'll be remembered as Herod the Butcher. And here's the thing. And yet here, Herod, 5 miles away from you, 5 miles, was the birth of God's Son, and you chose not to be a part of it. So 80 years later, Herod's long gone. Jesus has grown up to be a man. He's bearded now. He's that sweet little baby Jesus. You know, he's done miracles and he's gone to the cross and he's died and he's resurrected from the dead and he's ascended to be with the Father. 80 years later, Caesar's gone. Tiberius is gone. Mark Antony and Cleopatra and Jennifer Lopez is still around. The other ones are gone, right? And the glory of the Jewish temple's gone. It's been demolished. It's down. 80 years later, a guy by the name of John the Apostle emerges on the scene. In fact, he emerged on the scene when Jesus was still here. In fact, John, this is Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, one of the authorized biographers of Jesus' life. Jesus is hanging on the cross, and he looks down at his friend John, and he says to John, John, behold your mom. And Jesus looks at his mom. He says, "Mom, behold your son." He's basically saying, "John, from this point forward, I'm entrusting the care of my mother into your hands. And Mom, I want you to take John as your son." And so John, this guy who writes the scriptures, John is somebody who hears this narrative over and over. I mean, he begins to care for Jesus' mother. John's a guy who had the opportunity to sit with Mary and say, "Mary, tell me about that first not-so-perfect Christmas. What was it like as you were traveling to Bethlehem? What was it like knowing you were going to give birth to a king? What was it like when you were pregnant and you didn't even know how it happened? Mary, what was it like knowing that all of your friends, toddlers who were 2 years old and younger, were going to be murdered and your son was the only one that would survive? What was that like, Mary?" See, John heard all these things. He heard all these things. And so he saw every miracle. I mean, John, he watched Jesus do things no one else had ever seen. I mean, John's the one that peeped into the empty tomb. John's the one that had breakfast on the beach with Jesus after he'd rose from the dead. And so now John, 80 years later, he's an old man. And in his older years, he begins to write this narrative of this not-so-perfect Christmas. And now he's looking back over the course of his life at everything he's seen and heard. Everything he had the chance to sit down and discuss with Mary over and over again. And he decides to sit down and begin to summarize it all. And here's what he said. And this is so important. This is why this is so relevant to you and I. Because regardless of where you find yourself right now in the midst of this Christmas season, you know, spiritually or otherwise, you know, if you find yourself in a not-so-perfect you know, marriage situation or a not-so-perfect, you know, employment situation, or maybe jobless, first time ever going through the holidays without a job, or maybe, you know, the not-so-perfect situation with your kids, or maybe kids in a not-so-perfect, you know, situation with your parents, like, "Man, my parents are ruining my life," you know, I don't know, you know, or maybe you're in an addiction and you're just like, "Man, it is rough, it's ravaging my life." John right here summarizes it based on everything I've seen and observed. He summarizes it in this one verse, these two verses. Here's what he says. He says, "In him," meaning Jesus, "in him was," he says, past tense, "was." He says, "In him was life. And that life was," past tense, "that life was the light of all mankind." See, back then they thought this was just for Jewish people. It's like this Jewish Messiah that's coming, it's just for the Jews. And all of a sudden they're realizing, no, this is for everybody. See, this is an all skate, right? You don't have to sit on the side. He's like, this is for the whole world. This is for all mankind. This is a message for everyone. This is why we put like Christmas Eve invites in your hands, you know, every week during December. Because some of you are here because a year or two ago, somebody said, hey, they cared enough to say, "Hey, why don't you come to Christmas Eve at Cross Point with me?" And you came, and maybe something connected for the first time, and you began to get connected to God. And see, then he pauses, John pauses, and he moves past the past tense, and he says, "Here's what I've seen and experienced. He was the life, and that life and light was for everyone." Then he moves into the present, and he says, "Based on everything I've experienced," and he sends a message to you and to me, and he says this, he says, "The light shines right now in the darkness." He says, "Right now in the darkness, the light shines." Now understand, for John has now been exiled to the island of Patmos. Right, John has now watched the Roman Empire take over this entire region. John has lost nearly every friend he's ever known. And he's off on his own, aging near the end of his life. And he says, "The light continues to shine, even amidst the imperfectness of everything I see going on around me. The light continues to shine right now." And then he punctuates it with this powerful remark. And he says, "The darkness has not swallowed it up. The darkness has not overcome it. The darkness has not blown it out." Which brings us to you and me. What will your story be? As you sit here, you know, the second weekend into December, as it relates to the light of the world. And I don't know what brought you here today. I don't know if you're here every week or if, you know, somebody invited you and just said, "Hey, you ought to come to Cross Point today," or your girlfriend drug you here against your will, or you know, you heard we had great coffee and thought, "Well, come get some coffee." I don't know. We're just excited you're here. But what will your story be? Will it be a story of resistance? You know, or will you take your cue from the Magi who just go, "Hey, we're looking, God did something big and we're looking for it. And when we get there, we're just going to go, oh, wow." And we're going to bow our lives to that. Or will your story be the story of Herod, who his whole life, Herod's trying to build his kingdom. He's trying to control everything. Or will you participate in the kingdom God invites you into? See, so many times we hold on like this, and we just cling on to, we say, I want it this way, and my relationships have to go this way, and he has to do this, and she needs to do that. You know, and or I have to have this stuff, or if I don't have that, I'm not happy, when we're going to lose it all in the end anyway. You know, will our story be one of surrendering and saying, man, God, you're doing something still significant in the world, and we're celebrating it right now, or am I just going to let it pass by yet another Christmas? See, this is why there's a tension spiritually in the spiritual life, because we're human. There's a little bit of Herod in all of us. We like our own way. We like our own way. You know, right now, this morning, approximately 500 feet from where I sit right now, Grace Church is opening their doors back here. Isn't that exciting? It's exciting, isn't it? We want to celebrate that. Man, we're excited for this. We really are. They're moving into their brand new facility. I'm going to be honest with you. When I first met with Pastor Kevin Roth, we had lunch about a year and a half ago or so, and he said, hey, we're coming in right next door. There was a part of me that was not real excited about that, if I can be really honest. I mean, we're all for churches in the community, and we feel we need more churches. I mean, 83% of our community every weekend is not in church. And so we're always excited. I'm like, right next door. Ooh, that's a little close. And yet, and it's raised questions. Some of you have been like, well, you know, what's that going to do? And how are we going to, you know, handle traffic? And is it going to affect us? You know, we don't know. I mean, we're here because God's given us a very specific call to reach people and help them see Jesus. And that's what Grace is doing too. In fact, one of my friends up at the mall, every time I see him, and he's not somebody who knows Jesus yet. I'm trying to get him to come to Crossroads still. But he, every time I see him, even up to last week, he said, oh man, what the H-E double hockey stick is that thing coming in next to you? It's not a church, is it? And I'm like, well, it is. What, you guys think I was going to cuss in church or something? Come on. Why the hell would you think I'd do that? Not at Cross Point. Come on. No, but he says that every time. What in the H-E double hockey stick is that? It's not a church. Why would a church come in? I'm like, hey, listen, it's fine. We're all on the same team. We're all on the same team. See, it'd be easy. And initially, I had a little like, oh, geez, that's close. But you know what? It's easy to say, oh man, this is my territory. This is ours. Geez, why is another church? Listen, our community is a mess. I mean, we live in a great community, but there's brokenness all around us. All around us. And one of the kind of deeper questions God's been really putting in front of me, I've never heard God audibly, never heard an audible voice, but God usually speaks to me more intelligibly than audibly. And recently he said to me, Kurt, are you more interested in building Cross Point, the kingdom of Cross Point, or my kingdom? And then it got even a little more pointed. It was almost like, Kurt, what if the kingdom expanded all around you in your community, but Cross Point wasn't a part of it? Would you still be okay with that? And I had to get really, you know, that it just really gets raw all of a sudden. You're like, you know, God, I want to be about your kingdom, not mine. Your kingdom, not mine. So, man, we're excited. In fact, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago today, we met up at Cornerstone Lutheran, which is behind Kroger right down the road, and we met with Scott Geiger. Scott Geiger's on the left here in the blue shirt. He's the campus pastor there, and a handful of us pastors from all through this area met with Scott at 7 o'clock on November 20th on their grand opening weekend, had prayer with them, and just came together and said, hey, we're excited for what God's doing in the community. This morning at 6:30, we met right next door with Kevin Roth. Kevin Roth's the guy in the maroon shirt there, second guy in from the left, and we just prayed at 6:30 this morning, said, God, we are excited about how your kingdom is expanding. Because the kingdom expands today because we have another church doing powerful things in a powerful place. Is that exciting? Yes, that's exciting. In fact, I did this first hour. I want you to be in on this, all right? So you're not left out. Let's go ahead and stand. We're going to capture our excitement for them today. I'm going to do a selfie with you right here, all right? So on the count of three, I want you to just give a cheer at the count of three. Are you ready? Here we go. One, two, three. Woo! All right, one more. Let me get this crowd over here. One, two, three. Woo! All right, you can go ahead and have a seat. Because we're excited when the kingdom of God expands. And it's a good thing. And yeah, it's going to be messy with traffic. We're addressing that. But the kingdom is growing. See, here's the thing. When God's kingdom expands, whether it's in our personal life or in our community, it happens because we are open-handed. Because we say, God, whatever you want to do, man, we're up and in on what you're doing. Not tight-fisted, God, it's got to be my way. You know, this is how we walk around most of the time. But we have to ask ourselves, am I in this Christmas season, am I trying to control everything? Is there a little too much Herod in me right now? I mean, is there some forgiveness I need to extend? Is there some bitterness I need to let go of? Because the light shines in the darkness. In the not-so-perfect circumstances, in the not-so-perfect moments, the light shines, and it cannot, let me repeat, it cannot be overcome. It cannot be overcome by people who don't do what we want them to do. It can't be overcome by, you know, my wife or my husband who's hurt me or wounded me or been unfaithful to me. It can't be undone by, you know, if you're a grown adult saying, well, my parents screwed me up and you're still holding bitterness. The light overshines that. It can't outdo, you know, if you're a kid in here and you're like, my parents really screwed me up, or, you know, as a parent, you're like, my kids are screwing up my life. It's, you know, I don't know what it is. You know, if there's something in your kid's personality, you're like, man, someday that's going to make them great. We say this about our kids all the time. Someday that's going to be a great trait, but it's driving me crazy right now. There's bullheadedness is driving me crazy, God, but I don't want to break it. Whatever it is, can I begin to, this Christmas, say I'm going to live open-handed? Because the light shines, and it cannot, the darkness cannot blow it out. Now, I don't know where this lands for you this morning, I really don't, but I'm guessing there's a little bit of Herod in every single one of us this morning, where we're trying to control and steer and have it our way. So we have a few next steps this morning that are on the back of your connection card. You can go ahead and take that out. You know, you may have a different thing God's saying to you, but we just try to give you some growth points each week, some things to get traction on. And you know, maybe for you, maybe you're here for the first time, haven't been in church in a while, maybe a baby step for you is just saying, you know, I need to get my family back in church. I mean, there's something God's doing that I need to be a part of and want to be a part of, and I've been gone too long. Or I've just been gone, and I need to do this. And so maybe just returning next week is a baby step for you. You know, maybe as I've been sharing this morning, God's just put something in front of you and said, hey, here's the Herod in you. Here's what you've just been holding on to. And you need to say, okay, God, I'm gonna open that up and just, God, I want your way, not my way. Or maybe for some of us, maybe today's your day. Maybe you've never received Jesus, and you just need to receive him for the first time. Here you are in the midst of the Christmas season, one of the most amazing things that's ever happened. And maybe it's your day to just say, okay, God, you came close, and I want to receive that today. You're going to have a chance to do that in a moment. And so, and man, let me say something to you real quick, because, man, it's easy to connect, you know, check out sometimes. Let me just check in with you. That thing that's been rattling around in your mind that you're like, oh, I really ought to do that, or, you know, someday I'll get to that, or that relationship I really need to repair, I need to be less, you know, and more like this. Don't miss this moment in the midst of the Christmas season to be open to what God wants to do in and through you right now. Let's stand and let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, I just thank you. Man, I thank you that the light has come, as John said, and everything he'd seen, the light has come, and there is nothing, nothing, nothing that can blow it out. And God, I know for us in this room, there's probably a lot of things going on in our lives right now that we think, God, man, there's a lot of darkness. And yet, God, you're comfortable in places like Bethlehem and dirty mangers. You're comfortable in the mess. So God, I just pray that you would just fill those places with light right now. God, as we go through this season, as we continue, may you draw us close to you, God. May you draw us close to you, because after all, you came down, you lowered yourself down to draw close to us. God, maybe for some of us this morning, that means just receiving you for the first time. Maybe we've never started that relationship, and we say, you know, God, I need to do that. I don't want to miss this opportunity. You can do that by just saying these words quietly in your own way. Jesus, I want you in my life today. I pray for you to forgive me of my sin. God, I pray that you would just bring a healing to the broken places. Bring a healing to the places where I've had my fist clenched and been trying to do it my way. Holy Spirit, would you just fill me right now? I want your power. And I want to honor you, God, with the rest of my life to the best of my ability. Just help me to do that. Help me to do that. Amen. Amen. Let's just worship before we leave here today. And John, will you lead us?